Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
All right. Welcome everyone here to The Thriving Marriage. I'm Heather Choate here with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing wonderful. It seems like we're having a little bit of, we always seem to be having some sort of connection issues. I don't know. I guess it's my turn this time. I'm sure all of you can see this. My video looks a little bit choppy and I have no idea why. We love technology, right?
Love it and hate it. I always say there's gremlins in my computer. It's like they're wreaking havoc and just having a party while I'm sitting there wanting to tear my hair out. So everyone, welcome to the podcast today. If you're new to The Thriving Marriage, we encourage you guys to go back to the earlier podcasts and listen to some of them. But today's going to be kind of cool. We're on podcast 78. We're talking about four steps to take when your marriage is in crisis. And so even if you're new to the podcast, we're going to give some kind of the foundation principles that we teach here at High Thrive Coaching, specifically with our PATH method, and how you can improve your situation if you find that your marriage is in crisis, meaning your spouse wants a divorce, maybe they're having multiple affairs, they're in love with someone else, they say, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. Maybe you already are even divorced and you're wanting to know what you can do to get back together. That is what Mark and I do, and we have successfully helped thousands of students now all around the world to save their marriage. And so we're going to share with you, after working with so many clients and so many students, what really works if you find yourself in this kind of situation. Before we get to that, though, we're going to do our client win of the week. And this is one of our Relationship Reboot members. We have a course online, a Relationship Reboot course, and they've asked to be anonymous. But Mark, you want to go ahead and share what their win is?
Yeah, so this person shares that 6 months ago, her husband left the house and moved in on his own to his own apartment. She says that they had been struggling because he had been unfaithful. She explains mood changes, prescription, addiction, depression, lots of controlling from her side as well. She said, I was so hurt and desperate to save my marriage. I just wanted my family together. I decided to try the Relationship Reboot course and started listening to Mark and Heather's podcast. Started to take their advice, learning from the course, accepting my errors and changing my ways of interacting with my husband. Started meditating every morning, just like Heather recommends, and taking care of myself, exercising, changed my career, went back to school. Things started to change. We were communicating more. Around the first week of December, my husband told me he was going to get professional help and that he wanted to come back home with his family. We are still living apart, taking things slowly, but he will be home for March. I'm so grateful for this course and group. I mean, so that's a big win there. So obviously this person went through a lot of changes, put in a lot of effort, but it was her doing things on her own that led to her husband wanting to seek help and wanting to come back as well. And I mean, this is what we talk about here, is that, you know, one person really not giving up on the marriage and being proactive can make a big difference many times. So I like this example quite a bit here.
I do too. We often hear that, you know, to save your marriage, you need to work on yourself. And while that's really good for you, we know that that in and of itself isn't enough to save a marriage. So while it's awesome.
We're just having all sorts of
different things do help support a healthy, you know, lifestyle for you and help you feel more calm and centered. And when you're calm and centered and in a better state yourself, you are more attractive. Right? And you are able to make better decisions. But there, beyond that, there's more things that you need to do to really turn this kind of situation around. And so we're going to go deeper into those today. So Mark, right off the bat, when does a marriage go into crisis? When does it hit kind of that tipping point where we now consider this situation a crisis situation?
Well, I really like a quote from a gentleman. His name is Mitch Temple. He wrote an article for Focus on the Family, which, you know, I think it's a great group that they put together there. But he says that a marriage crisis typically occurs when an unusual amount of stress or unresolved conflict causes the level of anxiety to become too intense for the couple to manage. As a result, anger, resentment, dissatisfaction, frustration, and hopelessness take control of the relationship. The couple typically continues the negative interactions or disengages completely from one another, and the relationship shuts down. And this, Mr. Temple calls this the boiling point or marital meltdown in marriage. So essentially, a crisis is, you know, this is my opinion. I think it's underlying concern. So there's already problems in there, but then you start adding on additional stress or anxiety. Like right now, my hypothesis is that we are seeing a lot of marriage trouble because there's just a lot of additional stress and anxiety in the world. Between the pandemic, we had like some big crazy political stuff going on here in the States recently. But you add on a lot of this extra stress on top of the already existing concerns, and this leads to more negative interactions, and it tends to cascade a bit to grows to a point where people become hopeless or disengaged and frustrated, and they back out, and this is where we get the crisis. So honestly, like you're. Partner might be saying, okay, well, you're never there for me, or you know, you're so selfish and you're doing these things. But you know, for a long time, this concern, it, you know, while not great, it probably kept some amount of stability. There's some, it had some point where, like, okay, the marriage could continue on even if it wasn't perfectly healthy, and then you just added something on top of that and became unmanageable. Sometimes I talk about what's called a mental load, and if you just add too much onto there, this is what creates these crises. So we have four steps, Heather. You know,
sorry, just, a little bit there. Can you repeat that last sentence?
Yeah. So I'm just
the mental load.
Seems like, well, now, okay, this is terrible. Now we're both having connection issues. I'm going to have to really go back. This is odd because I wasn't even having connection issues earlier in the day, so I don't know what's happening here. All right, so what I was saying is, so we have this situation that creates a crisis, and I imagine many of you are probably in this situation. So what do? We have four steps. Now, this is going, I'm going to admit this is a broad overview. We're going to have a little bit of specifics here, but, you know, as always, this is not a one-size-fits-all sort of thing, and we always recommend getting personalized professional help. It's just, you need that if you're in a crisis mode and you actually want to save your relationship. So, Heather, what are our steps that we have here?
Well, first of all, calm down. So if you're in this situation, recognize that, first of all, you're not the only one. We help, like I said, thousands of people who are going through this exact same situation. And while it is an urgent situation, it doesn't mean that's it for you. So yeah, if you have an urgent medical need, we go to the emergency room, right? It doesn't mean that you're dead, but it means that things need to be solved quickly in order to have a healthy outcome, right? So panicking, creating more stress and anxiety is not going to help the situation. Imagine that we just had a major wound, maybe we were in an accident, and then now we're in high stress, anxiety, and freaking out, unable to accept help from other people, unwilling to go to the ER or whatever needed to happen. Would that help the situation? No. So we really need to be mindful of where our emotional state is. And we talk a lot about this in the podcast, about that kind of emotional processing to get out of the fight, flight, or freeze response so that we can act from the better part of ourselves. So, Mark, what do you see here with this really panicking, creating more tension, more stress?
Well, we just talked about what creates the crisis situation. It's when people become overwhelmed. There's too much going on. So we add more to that sense of overwhelm, and it's not going to help. And I'm going to give an example about this. Now, not to pat myself on the back, but, you know, so my wife has told me, like, one of the things that she really appreciates about me is a sense of calm that I can bring to many situations. So here she is, she's upset about something, and I can calm everything down. But I'm going to admit that's not 100% the case all the time. And I notice, like, with, you know, I can't even think of a specific argument where this popped up, but I can easily imagine a scenario where my wife comes upset, perhaps maybe even about something that I do. And, you know, I respond not feeling heard or getting upset myself. And what happens? It tends to escalate a little bit. Now, my wife and I, we escalate just a very little bit before we kind of realize, okay, we need to stop this and calm down. But this is what I'm talking about, is if I respond to my wife with defensiveness, say, no, that's, you know, what you're saying isn't a problem. Or if I start getting really anxious and panicky and I'm saying, you know, please, you know, don't get upset with me. We can fix this. You know, if I start being dismissive or defensive in that way, it tends to not go well. And it's only when either, you know, my wife or I can approach this with a more level head that we are able to start approaching a solution. And I know a lot of our clients here, Heather, or even a lot of the audience that we have, they hear this problem come up, and their husband or wife says, you know, I'm not sure what I want in the marriage anymore. And all these alarms go off, and they're like, oh no, what am I going to do? And, you know, inadvertently start pushing their partner away. So this is why I have this as the first step. But I mean, I think there's a few specific things that we need to stop. Heather, you want to talk about that for a second?
Oh yeah. And so when we get into these modes of anxiety, right, we often get into blaming the other person, looking for external circumstances to blame for what's going on, feeling like a victim ourselves, right? Or we might get into begging, pleading, please don't go, please don't do this, please give me another chance, please, 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 right? When we can get into criticizing them, attacking them, comparing them or us or the marriage to someone else, right? And what it should be, we have a lot of expectations of what it should be and kind of bringing us down about that. And then defensive and dismissive behavior. So again, that defensiveness often causes us to attack or blame the other person, or just dismissing it, like, this isn't, you know, pushing it to the side, saying, I'm not gonna deal with this right now. I'm not gonna face this right now. So we get into like the fight, flight, or freeze response. And so as you're listening to this, check in with yourself. Are you in any of these behaviors yourself? And if so, you're actually pretty normal, because I'd say like 99% of us have this as our first initial response to major crises in our lives. And so know that you're really normal, but that there's a better way of doing things. I personally say that I am a recovering anxiety addict, because I used to be addicted to anxiety. And I used to take every little thing in, and instead of being a level 2 problem, I would always make it a level 10 problem. And that kind of tension never really resolved the issues and only aggravated them. So I know a lot of you are probably shaking your head like, yeah, I get this, but what do we actually do about it, right?
Mm-hmm. But I just want to point out, like, why this is important. I mean, one, I think we mentioned that it adds to that sense of overwhelm, but a lot of the panicking behavior, the blaming, the begging and pleading, the criticizing, the defensiveness, it essentially invalidates the concerns that your partner has, because you start focusing like, okay, well, you're doing this and I'm the victim here and please take care of me. And how could you do this to me? How could you do this to the family? And none of that really takes the time to say, okay, is there an actual valid concern here that this person has? Why might they be coming to this conclusion that the marriage might not be working for them?
Our connections are fighting with each other. I was just adding to what you're saying that all of this goes with our PATH method, which P stands for perspective. Mm-hmm. When we are so in our own pain, in our own perspective, then we cannot. And it does feel really invalidating to them because you're so wrapped up into what's going on for you. And so there's a balance that needs to happen there where you do get what your core needs are, like those need to be respected and met, but we can't do it by being dismissive, defensive, demanding that they work on the relationship, blaming them, begging them to work on it.
So I think step two, I think it's really important, you know, once you've calmed down to really take some time to evaluate, much like you were saying there, Heather, with our PATH method, this does still even correlate, I think, to that P in PATH for perspective. I think it's, in my opinion, when you are first getting into this crisis mode, I think it's important to prioritize a few things here. Because of the crisis, I think, you know, the easiest path to make the biggest amount of difference is to look at things that are going to reduce overall conflict, tension, stress, or anxiety. When I'm working with my clients, oftentimes I'll describe, you know, what the overall goals are. And, you know, almost always that first step is to remove the sources of pain, to remove any sources of tension, anxiety, just trying to get it to a neutral position. A lot of times if a partner's pulling away, they're not going to be ready to recommit to the marriage. They're not going to be ready to go out on dates and resume intimacy and all these other nice things. But we can make a big difference if we just make it at least neutral instead of painful. A lot of times, like if you have that extra source of anxiety and tension and arguments, it's just going to make solving the underlying issues in the marriage a bit more difficult. So prioritize that. Then I'm gonna say, you know, you then should prioritize things that are gonna help you to be more stable. Prioritize self-care. And once again, I'm not even suggesting at that stage, head out on dates and try to get them to commit to the marriage. I want you to be a happy, healthy person who can be light and positive and flirty. But if you are not taking care of yourself, you're not going to be able to add all the nice things back into the relationship. You know, self-care might mean a lot of different things. It might mean setting boundaries and it might mean holding your spouse accountable. But I would focus a bit more on, okay, what can I do? What am I responsible for? And how can I take care of myself? And then I think it's easier to approach a lot of the root causes. We talk about the root issues, root causes. It's basically issues that cause several other problems. So an example of this, you know, for one couple, it might be, you know, like a problematic sex life. And, you know, that causes arguments and causes people to feel invalidated and causes people to feel unappreciated or unloved. And so here's one problem that splinters off and causes a bunch of other ones. Or it might be a lot of anxiety on one partner, which then causes arguments and causes people to check in on their partner and snoop and not trust people. But those are the kind of things that I would be prioritizing in that order. Ways to bring things to neutral, things that are going to help you to be more stable in self-care, and then root issues that are a little bit more difficult and tricky to tackle. So, Heather.
Right. So if we compare this to, medical example that we kind of gave at the beginning, right? We need to calm down ourselves first so that we can get ourselves to the proper help. And then what is a medical professional fight for their life kind of situation? They're going to make them stable, right? That's always the first goal, is to stabilize the patient. They don't go in and try to figure out, okay, why did their left lung just collapse or whatever right away? They try to get them breathing again, right? So that's kind of what we're doing here, is we want to get you calm down, right, and stable as much as we can to bring it to a neutral situation if they're causing this to happen.
So, we
want to do here is we never want to put just a Band-Aid on the problem and think that that's going to solve it. And what we see happen is that there are a lot of professionals, well-meaning professionals, that simply don't know, but they're putting a lot of Band-Aids on things, or even a lot of the self-help books or the common advice out there just kind of puts Band-Aids on things without figuring out what's really causing these things to show up in the first place and healing them at the deepest level. When you heal something at the deepest level, that's why we have clients coming back now 3-4 years later saying, my marriage is incredible now because we solved the underlying issues. Even after the affair, our marriage is blissful and we have these beautiful children and we make these happy memories now. We have clients like that all the time that are coming to us because they have truly healed the challenges that were causing things to come up. And so an important part here, as we're looking at the root issues, is to find out what has driven your spouse to this point. And we need to take time to figure out why we didn't see these problems sooner, right? Or why action wasn't taken before this, and then identify what parts are our responsibility and what we can have an impact on. I know a lot of people will say, I was blindsided. I had no idea this was coming. I had no idea they felt this way. I had no idea that it was this bad, right? And so we need to kind of be a curious person with understanding to uncover really what was going on in our spouse's heart, in their mind, that led them to do these things that took us by surprise. That way we can solve them and find out where we have some ability to help them with that, where we have some control, not to control them, but where we can have an influence on them.
I think that's a really big and important point, is figuring out why, especially those people who have been blindsided. Why didn't you see the problems sooner? That for me, this is always a line of questions that I will pursue when speaking with a client, because this usually tells me quite a bit and usually points in a really good direction in terms of what needs to be worked on. So if they're saying, I had no idea that my spouse was so unhappy, that should be this huge alarm going off, saying, okay, something happened there that made it harder for us to provide some feedback that would have prevented this crisis. And that probably, I mean, like I said, you need to figure out why. Otherwise, you're going to run into problems like this again. Our step three here, third step, I'm going to say, okay, you calm things down. You've kind of figured things out. What's wrong? I usually move towards a position of support, not so much. And it's going to make more sense when we get to the fourth step. But I do think that if your spouse is pulling away, I do tend to recommend a focus in on what they're looking for and what they're needing as an earlier step, as opposed to, you know, creating balance and asking for things for yourself. It's just that if your partner has gotten to this point, there's this crisis and they're saying, I've had enough. There does need to be some period of time where they are feeling heard. They're feeling like their concerns can be resolved, where they can feel a little bit more hope in the relationship. And so I am typically recommending that a focus in on what they are needing tends to need to happen before we can balance it out a bit better. So what I'm getting at here, though, is if we've identified be sources of stress and anxiety. Okay, you need to go and take care of that. Focus in on what is creating that stress for your partner. And I tell people this all the time. You want to position yourself as to make your spouse feel as though you are an ally with their concerns, with the things that they want for themselves. Heather, I mean, we talk about this with some frequency. They usually get divorced for a reason. They want something, right?
Right.
They want things like happiness. They want things like freedom and calm and security. They're pursuing something in their that they feel is missing. And if your spouse feels as though you are supporting them in reaching that goal, you've kind of taken away some of the drive to actually pull away from the relationship. It's no longer, you're not no longer a drain on that need, but you are actually providing that for them. And there doesn't, you know, there's not as quite as much incentive to leave in quite so much of a hurry.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're showing them that we support them in their goal, maybe not in the way they're going about getting their goal.
Yes.
So what they could be doing to go about to get the goal by having an affair or, you know, gambling or you know, whatever the behavior might be, distrustful behavior, you know, the unhealthy behavior, definitely not that. But when you peel back what's causing the unhealthy behavior, you realize the underlying need there, that is the goal that we do support them with. I do want to support you in feeling significant. I do want to support you in feeling emotional connection. I do.
You know, like an extreme example of this, and this is something that if you really get deep into something like a problem like an affair, it's really easy to say, okay, the person having the affair is doing the wrong thing. And I would agree. They're not being healthy with something. But if you just approach it as in they're doing something wrong and that's the end of it, you're not going to resolve that issue. And you need to identify, okay, why was this even considered as an option at some point? You know, what was missing in their life and what are they looking for? And if you can't consider that, I'm going to just tell you things are probably not going to work out, or you're going to likely see the same problem again later on down the road. I mean, I know that that sounds harsh, and I don't want to in any way blame the victim in an affair. And I don't want to minimize the impact that having an affair has. It's a terrible thing. But in getting to a point of health, you do have to look at how would we actually provide what was needed there so that they don't need to turn to unhealthy means. Maybe they need to take that, you know, proactive behavior themselves. But, you know, at this stage, if they're not committed to the relationship, you might need to be offering some support there.
Right. The studies have shown that those who have cheated are, again, more likely to cheat as well. But the interesting thing is that the research also shows that if you've been cheated on, you're also more likely to be cheated on again in the future, which I know sounds really harsh, okay? But there is some evidence there that there are things that we need to heal. There's a pattern or a cycle going on. And so what Mark and I have found is that when we heal the things that are causing these cycles to show up, both for those that are having affairs and those who are being cheated on, they both can do things that will stop the cycle from repeating. And that only happens when we really uncover the root issues of why. We see all too often couples will not get the help that they want, that they need, and they will not want to work it out with their partner. They won't want to find out what led their spouse to have the affair, and they will end up getting divorced only to fall back into the same relationship again a few years later. And that's not what we want for anyone, because we have to do some different things. So being proactive here and making sure that we really take initiative on healing these cycles so we can have real lasting change.
I think you mentioned there being proactive, and I think this is another good idea. If we're trying to offer support, if this is a really bad crisis situation, your partner's pulling away, I do see some people who get into this habit of being like, okay, they go to their spouse and say, what's wrong? What do you want fixed? And then they go and they try to resolve that thing. And for a lot of people, that's just, it's not good enough. It doesn't demonstrate that you are genuinely concerned. It demonstrates that you just want the problems to go away. I mean, that's an unhealthy view of it. I think there's much more going on than that. But if we really want your partner to feel supported in their concerns, I do think being proactive is important to not only take care of the things that have been specifically complained about, but take initiative on solutions beyond what has been requested. So if they're saying, we always argue, then it's great that you stop arguing. It's better if you're proactive and you say, okay, I'm going to go get professional help and figure out why we're arguing. I'm going to go and try to create more peace in our relationship, and I'm going to go and, you know, like, and have all these other things that are parallel or just, you know, surrounding this problem that you're taking care of.
Right. So one of the challenges that happen when you only take care of the things that your spouse has said, I mean, to a lot of people, this makes sense. Like, okay, you said, don't nag, be home, you know, from work on time and put the phone down at the table. So you do those things and you get into a lot of action thinking that that's going to fix it. But what happens if that's what you do? First of all, it tends to be exhausting, but it also tends to be ineffective because your spouse can see it as a manipulation. And that it's not real lasting deep change. It's just that you're trying to fix a few things to patch up the relationship and maybe manipulate them to come back to you or something like that. So really making sure that you go deep into having all the foundations of a healthy relationship and healing those deeper things is what's really going to work here.
Basically what we're getting at, it's we're trying to portray motivation, or we're trying to portray this sense that your partner is more important than this base level of interaction. And that's a big problem, is this lack of trust. Like, is my partner actually motivated to be here in the marriage, or are they just trying to get me back, or are they just trying to make these problems disappear? And that how that motivation is described is a big important factor in whether the couple can work things out or not.
This is the final note here with step three before we go on to step four, is that this whole idea of support, knowing how to, you know, lessen this stress, how to lessen the conflict, and then how to help your spouse feel like you really are an ally and that you're really solving some of these deeper root issues, requires guidance, and it requires, like, yourself, right? You would go to professionals that know how to solve this kind of thing. And so when we're dealing with major challenges in our relationship, we need to handle them with as much care as possible. And going to mentors, to coaches, people who have gone through the same things and know how to diagnose properly what we're experiencing, and then find the correct treatment plan to get you healthy and well in the relationship. And so that is exactly what Mark and I do. We're the ICU for marriages. We help people in this exact kind of situation so that you can get that support, you get that guidance through this whole thing. Because when we're in our own pain, we might not know why our left lung might collapse, right? We need an expert that can say, okay, this is what's really going on here. This is why this happened, and this is what we need to do about it. All right, so on to step four. Creating balance. Mark, why is this step so important here?
So I will admit, I think early on in my career, I might have leaned a little bit too heavy in the direction of trying to placate or appease the partner that was leaving the relationship. Now, that was never my intention. You know, like I had thing, you know, I'd always focus a bit more on boundaries, but I don't think I'd emphasize it quite enough. And I do think that this is a very important factor. Like we were talking about, there are certain patterns that emerge within a relationship that create these problems. And if you only appease the person that's leaning away from the marriage, leaving the marriage, it's very likely to be unsustainable. A crisis has occurred because both partners are feeling drained, are not getting what they need. So for instance, let's take the affair example. Here is a very common situation that creates an affair is a partner who is not feeling loved themselves. So they go to their husband or wife and they start complaining and they start saying, you're not doing enough for me. And they start saying that, you know, why can't you be here for me? And it creates this a lot of stress. And then the other partner encounters someone who just is able to be very light and playful. And we see an easy path to an affair. So, but what I'm getting at here is, yes, the affair part, the person committing the affair was feeling criticized, but the person criticizing also had needs that weren't being met in the proper way. And this led to the critical criticizing behavior, the, you know, all this bringing up of problems, which pushed their partner away in this hypothetical situation. And if we only say, okay, well, here's this person who's stepping out, what do they need? You are inevitably going to get back into the situation where your needs aren't being met and it's going to feel exhausting and you're going to fall back on the old behavior that probably influenced your partner to leaving in the first place. And I kind of spoke about this. I'm using kind of like a lot of hypotheticals here. This makes sense, right? I'm not speaking gibberish.
Oh, makes sense to me. But yeah, if you guys have a question or comment, always reach out to us and let us know. You know, sometimes I think that Mark and I can get as the doctors, you know, talking in the doctor terms more from the high level overview. And so we want to make sure that you guys are getting this as you're the ones going through it. For sure.
Yes. All right, I was just looking at one of the comments. Yeah, if you, like I said, if you want long-lasting solutions, you're going to need to both feel like that's there's a sustainable part here. And so quite often, this means that there needs to be a discussion of holding your partner accountable, setting appropriate boundaries. How do you request support in effective, healthy ways? And honestly, if you started with these things, you're very likely not going to meet much success because it's difficult when you're going through a crisis and your partner is needing that stuff themselves. They're wanting to set boundaries and hold people accountable and needing support, and they're not feeling it. And if they're not the ones seeking help and getting, you know, listening into podcasts and reading books and whatnot, very likely you're going to need to be the one that's going to be needing to provide that first before you start, you know, balancing it out. Now,
with that being said,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead and finish your thought there.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to do plug time, unashamed, that if you are struggling with that and needing the professional help there, I encourage you guys to get on to highthrivecoaching.com/apply and you can book a free marriage breakthrough session with us and we can get to the root issues of what's going on there and a game plan of how to help heal this as quickly as possible.
Did you want to discuss anything else, Heather, before we move on to our marriage MythBuster?
To center yourself, remember the fight, flight, or freeze response is not going to serve you, but it's normal and it's natural. One of the most empowering things I've ever learned in my life is how to recover from anxiety addiction and how to process things emotionally in my life so that I can act from a better, so much empowerment in that. You know, just being really honest, there's so much stress right now. We're almost a year into this COVID thing here in the United States. We've had different ups and downs with our business personally. You know, we've had different ups and downs with our children, with our health, with extended family members. Ago, when I thought went through my own marriage crisis, my own personal health crisis going through cancer, and have these tools now to be able to just manage and move through these things so that I can feel calm, empowered, and still act from a better part of myself. I don't always do it perfectly, but without these tools, I know I'd be a total wreck. So that is always the first step, is making sure that we get to that higher reasoning part of ourselves. We act from a better version of ourselves. We don't just act from the animal instinctual part of ourselves that we regret, right? It almost always leads to something even worse than what it originally was. And so rather than living with the pain of regret of our behavior and not acting very well because we reacted, we did the blaming, we did the demanding they work on things, the complaining, the criticizing, the begging, the pleading, we truly act from a better part of ourselves. We shift out of fear into what I call faith, which is movement, right? It's action. It's moving towards what we know we can achieve and having that hope there. Then going into evaluating, finding out what's really going on. Why did this really happen? Not allowing the cycles to repeat themselves. Getting the support that you need. You need to recognize that this is an urgent situation, but it's not hopeless. You just need to get the right experts on your side to guide you through these things and help you and in this healing process. And then, of course, having that balance, making sure that you're taking care of yourself so that you have the energy to heal your relationship and create space for that healing to occur. So, awesome. Mark, thank you for sharing that. Now I think we're ready to go over to our myth buster. Mm-hmm. Our myth buster today is, if I am not affectionate towards my spouse all the time, then I'm not in love. So this one came from the group. A member was expressing that they feel like they're supposed to be affectionate constantly, or then they're really not in love. So
yeah, so this idea or this myth comes about from, I think, a couple of improper definitions. An improper definition of what love is combined, I'm going to say, with a sense of insecurity, actually. I'm going to call, I don't know who made the comment, but I'm just going to call it out for what it is. This is a sense of insecurity. So the idea here is that if I'm not experiencing love constantly, or if I'm not providing that love constantly, then I don't feel secure about my relationship. That's kind of like where that idea is coming from. Okay, if I'm not affectionate, then I'm not in love. I'm not feeling super secure here. Now, what typically happens then, it results in the insecure person overly pursuing attention and affection from their partner, resulting in pushing them further away, or fearing that that there isn't love there, so I need to pursue it, and still the same result, pushing them further away. Now, I'm making some assumptions here. I'm making an assumption that this is pushing them further away. Otherwise, this fear wouldn't be there. And this is, we talked a little bit about this on another week, this pursuer-avoider dynamic, where, you know, some amount of insecurity causes people to really push for things. I need to feel this affection. I need to see this affection from them. I'm going to chase after it. And, you know, if that partner then reciprocated or gave that love back, everything would be fine. And they wouldn't be expressing this concern. But basically, because of this pursuing behavior, because they're saying, okay, I need to see this affection all the time, either from myself or from my partner to me, and they keep pushing this, it effectively makes the worry come true. So it's an odd thing, because they say, okay, well, if I don't have affection towards my spouse all the time, then I'm not in love. I'm going to pursue it and see, because I'm not feeling it all the time, they're being pushed away, and see, we don't have this love. But it's the worry that causes it. It makes the myth true if you hold on to that fear. is an odd thing. So this myth also comes about from a misunderstanding, I think, many cases, about how people might express affection. So I really like Gary Chapman's idea here. You know, I know a lot of you are already familiar with this, the love languages. I think it explains this concept very well. If you're not familiar, essentially he says that people have different preferences and expressions of love, five different ones. I think, this whole myth is because of these two improper definitions. And how we define love and affection have a really big impact on this whole situation. And I think that has much more of an impact, more so than the frequency of how much affection is given. If I'm making, to kind of sum this all up, basically, it's much more important that you are getting the right kind of affection and feeling fulfilled rather than that affection needs to be constant. That's much more what needs to happen. Case in point, I share this quite frequently. You know, many years ago, my wife and I had a misunderstanding about love languages, and we both felt unloved from the other person. And it just turns out that we weren't speaking the same sort of love language. And when we made a conscious effort to shift that a little bit and express when we were trying to express affection towards each other, everything settled down quite a bit more. We both felt more secure. We both felt that affection better. And so neither of us were really chasing after that all the time. And things calmed down quite a bit. So
what I like about the love languages is that it fits really well into perspective. And to me, it's just one piece. And we need to be careful not to assume that one piece is the entire solution. Getting into perspective about what your emotional needs are, your romantic needs, and how you receive love and how your partner receives love. So it's getting that perspective that helps bridge that gap there at the beginning stage. But of course, we need every other step in the process to really reconcile the relationship fully.
Yeah, I think this, like you said, it's just one piece. Sometimes we talk about basic emotional needs. And I think this is a really good way to evaluate needs for connection and love, but it does not necessarily touch on needs of security or needs for growth, needs for having variety in life. But it really does a good job at helping people to explore needs for connection and love.
Connection, right. Yeah, so one piece of one piece, which is a good piece, and it applies really well with this myth. Awesome. Thank you, Mark. We got a comment here from a Facebook user. Could you do a podcast focusing on people in the long haul, where they have been following the plan for a year or more and things are still shut down, but the marriage is intact? So yeah, we can definitely go into that. These kind of longer term challenges are symptomatic that the root issues really haven't been resolved. While Mark and I both know, right, Mark, that, and you guys know too, a marriage restoration takes time. This is not an overnight fix. While we work to get you to stable as quickly as humanly possible, just like a doctor would in the ER, get your body stable as fast as humanly possible, healing the underlying issues that are causing these things to show up for you guys does take time. And we're not going to pretend that we have a magic wand and can fix it overnight. If anyone's selling you that, then run.
I do think this is a great topic, though, for future discussion in terms of like when to determine how long, when it's been too long, or what to start doing when things are starting to, when you've hit a plateau or it's gotten stagnant in progress. I think that's a great topic.
I do too. And those plateaus do happen. And so being mindful that there is another step to master to overcome that plateau is what it's really all about. And even in our healthy marriages, Mark, we still hit plateaus, even though situations aren't dire. And there are things that we do to help us have a breakthrough from those plateaus to experience even greater levels of communication, understanding, passion, romance, connection. So like you've been doing this a year or more, things are still not really progressing, then I absolutely think we could do a podcast on that. So thank you for that suggestion. And next week, we are going to interview one of our clients who has successfully reconciled with her spouse. So Mark will be coming on here to interview with them, and that helps you to feel like you're not alone and to relate to someone who's gone through it and see the proof the proof's in the pudding, right? So we're going to show you some pudding and show you that this process really works when you apply it to your relationship. Awesome. Great. Thank you so much, Mark. Thank you all for joining.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.